Good evening, and welcome to the Local Edition. I'm your host, Genevieve Hartnett. Jason Dole has the night off, but we have a lot to get into on the show tonight, so let's not waste any time. In the second half of the show, millions of Americans are being forced to make hard decisions about healthcare coverage as the cost for plans becomes unattainable. Will Congress's vote to extend healthcare tax credits later this month bring any hope? Before that, we'll have an update about the ongoing investigation into a violent night at the emergency department at St. Luke's Hospital. But first, the holiday season is here, but for many of us, the season isn't always merry and bright. The holidays can be a time filled with mental health triggers and spikes in depression and anxiety. Children and teens are especially feeling the burden of the world around them. According to new research from Mental Health America, among 12 to 17-year-olds, roughly 1 in 6 experienced a major depressive episode in the last year, and 1 in 10 reported serious thoughts of suicide. Thankfully, Sound It Out, a national campaign through the Ad Council and Pivotal, is trying to create a solution. With the help of Dr. Marielle Bouquet, licensed psychologist and intergenerational trauma expert, as well as Dr. Michael Lindsay, professor of social work at NYU Silver School of Social Work, Sound It Out has created Listen In, a podcast designed to help parents and caregivers support their children's emotional well-being. I got the chance to speak to both Dr. Bouquet and Dr. Lindsay. Here's that conversation. And please note that this story mentions suicide and intergenerational trauma, so if either of those topics bother you, please take care of yourself however you need.
The podcast itself has been spearheaded by the folks at Sound It Out and Ad Council and Pivotal. And myself and Dr. Lindsay, we all are very passionate about children's mental health. And so it made all the sense in the world to, with our understanding of the fact that we have a youth mental health crisis on our hands and that parents are looking for any kind of resource that can actually help their children to feel safe and heard and seen, we felt that it was going to be an important opportunity to take on to actually help educate parents on how they can have very wholehearted conversations with their children about their mental well-being.
We talk about how parents can get beyond the I'm fine part of a conversation and develop more trust between themselves and their children. We also cover the unexpected transitions of middle school and high school and the emotional tug of war between wanting to protect a child and learning how to grow, to let them grow. Parents can get overwhelmed too. It's okay if you feel worried or angry while talking with your child, and you might feel sad or disappointed if they don't want to talk with you. We ask parents to remember that it's okay if they don't know what to say or feel a bit lost or need outside support because parents don't have all the answers.
What are the major issues you see as affecting children's mental health right now, and how do we address that in ways that are productive? How can parents address it in the home? How can we address it as a society better?
This is such a great question. The time frame that we're talking about, middle and high school, can be a tough time in terms of transitions, gaining more autonomy over your decision making, sort of loosening the ties, if you will, that kids have with their caregivers or parents. And it's a time that is challenging in terms of identifying who are your friend networks or what you want out of life in terms of your long-term trajectory, right? And so those are times that are sort of those challenges can lead up to emotional and psychological struggles, where mental health then is incredibly challenged, right? In the context in which we offer the advice and support for parents to be able to, again, have the requisite skills and the love language, if you will, that would be best support to children.
They're growing up in a digital age, completely surrounded by technology in a way that can be very isolating. And it's not just social media. It's really all of the technology around them that kind of disconnects them from human connection, which is so essential for our well-being, both physical and mental health. And so that is one of the biggest driving forces. But we also have children and adolescents that, let's not forget, had actually had to endure a global, persistent, and lengthy crisis where they had their entire worlds flipped upside down. They were disconnected from their peers, from their school environments, from anything that felt normal. And as a result, they had to, you know, just kind of contend with that in such critical periods of their development. So it's really essential for us to also consider the fact that we had a collective trauma that a lot of the younger folks in our lives had to endure in a way that's completely different from adults that already had fully developed brains and had different kinds of coping mechanisms. Children didn't necessarily have that. And so they're working with what they have and doing the best that they can. And it's why us, the adults that have greater capacity, need to step in and really listen in and actually help them through this crisis.
Whether as a result of household dynamics or simply a desire for independence, children don't always let their parents and caregivers know how they're feeling. For this reason, Lindsay provides common signs that a child may be struggling with their mental health.
But, you know, we also want to offer tips and resources, right? Because kids often cope in ways that bring relief and do no harm. But it can be concerning if they are coping in ways that are or can become destructive. And so we offer then the signs, telltale signs that parents can have or be informed about to know that their child may be struggling. Some of those signs are a sudden change in behavior, sleep schedule, appetite, or appearance. I often say, Genevieve, it's not rocket science in the sense that you want to understand if there is a stark difference in the way that your child formerly was to where they are now.
Coming of age during the COVID-19 pandemic and inhabiting a world where division and violence feel imminent is enough to affect any child's mental health. However, these struggles are often compounded for children who experience intergenerational trauma. Dr. Bouquet spoke about how children whose descendants have faced systemic racism, abuse, war, or genocide often experience challenges with their emotional well-being and can have a harder time expressing that they need help.
The thing about intergenerational trauma is that it doesn't really discriminate in that it is an experience that we have individuals that come from backgrounds, their identities are not held at the margins, but maybe within their family line, they've had domestic abuse or disruption in their lives that has been very adverse and complicated. However, when you layer on the identities that are held at the margins, we start to see that there are a lot more experiences of adversity, that the children and the adults that belong to these communities tend to have a number of different ongoing onslaughts that are directly connected to the identities that they have that actually layer on top of the traumas that may be there from a family perspective.
In terms of intergenerational trauma, are there markers that you even see in children that maybe they don't necessarily know but can be signs that they have this trauma that they're dealing with?
It's such a beautiful question. Thank you for it. And absolutely. The thing about intergenerational trauma is that we have both a biological and a psychological component, meaning that a person's biology from birth, from conception, tends to be marked by these emotional vulnerabilities on a chemical and hormonal level. And so it's going to be really important that we notice if a child is difficult to console, if they have really big emotions and they're really hard to calm down, even as a baby, right? Like we start to see some of the markers of a child that is actually growing up with some of these hormonal changes and ways in which their body is interacting differently with their social environment because they have generational trauma as a part of their history. So yeah, it is really essential for us to consider in the grand scheme of things, and the fact that we have this global mental health crisis and so much that these children are suffering through, that we also consider the biological vulnerabilities that they also come with.
It may be uncomfortable at first, but both Bouquet and Lindsay say that it's important for parents and caregivers to start these conversations with their children. And with the normalization of mental health in our culture, children are often expecting to have these conversations with supportive and non-judgmental guardians.
The good news is that according to a study from Sergo's Youth Mental Health Tracker, 67% of youth found talking to a family member to be helpful for their mental health and well-being. That's why it's so important for parents and caregivers to open up ongoing and supportive conversations with their kids, conversations that where they can help them by listening and being supportive. And that's what kids really want from the adults in their lives.
And what we wanted, both myself and Dr. Lindsay and the Sounded Out folks, what we wanted was to help parents to have tools that feel accessible, to be able to have these very difficult conversations with their kids that they may not feel equipped to have. There aren't very many parents that feel like they have the tools to actually have a conversation about suicidal thoughts with their children. And it is essential, especially with a statistic like over 10% of children having a serious consideration of suicidality. It is really essential that every parent is equipped with what they need to have that conversation with their child. We have resources at soundedouttogether.org, and also the podcast can be found at soundedouttogether.org/podcast.
Thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Genevieve, for the time.
Thank you. In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill. Moving right along, a disturbing incident inside the emergency room at St. Luke's Hospital has raised more questions than answers. Officials say a man walked in holding a knife, a single gunshot was fired, yet two people ended up wounded and one of them didn't survive. What really happened in those chaotic moments? Radio Catskill's Annie Bennett has a report.
And then I screamed, like I was screaming. I was looking at the people and said, my leg hurts, and no one cared.
Shamika Hadosinga accompanied her husband to the emergency room on November 13th. He had an infection in his hand, but Mrs. Hadosinga left with a much worse injury, a gunshot wound in the leg.
Well, I can't answer specific questions. I can tell you that the investigation is ongoing into the incident that allegedly occurred.
That's Ryan Greenbaum, Executive Assistant District Attorney. The non-fatal shooting task force is currently investigating the incident. Reports say that a security guard at a hospital shot an intruder with a knife and Ms. Hadosinga was caught in the crossfire.
We've acknowledged that we're conducting the investigation, but we're not in a position at this point to disclose any further details.
According to the city of Newburgh, the fire department responded to a pulled alarm at Montefiore St. Luke's Cornwall Hospital in Newburgh, New York. The firefighters referred press requests to the city manager, who did not respond to requests for comment.
And while we are inside the ER, the fire bell rang and then we came to us and she told me to go out to the lobby area. And then I didn't go straight away. And again, another nurse came and she escorted me to the lobby.
After the fire alarm went off, an altercation broke out between a security guard and a Newburgh resident identified as Carlos Ortiz. The city of Newburgh says Ortiz attacked the guard with a knife, who fired a single round in defense. Hagosinga says she did not see a knife and that the scene developed so quickly she barely had time to process what was happening.
One guy was coming through that metal detector door, and it was like I didn't notice any shouting or nothing like that, but within 1 or 2 minutes, I noticed two guys, like they are coming towards me. One guy was pushing the other one. So I slightly stand up, and then as soon as I stand up, I realized my left leg got like totally numb. And then I screamed, like I was screaming. I was looking at the people and said, My leg hurts, my leg hurts, and no one cared. I thought I'm in shock and I was screaming. And then I was looking behind and I saw the one guy was laying on the floor. They were saying that guy was carrying a knife, but I haven't seen anything like that.
You heard the fire alarm go off and then they brought you into the lobby.
Yeah.
Did you see the guy who had the knife?
No, I saw a guy, but I didn't see that he was carrying a knife.
St. Luke's Emergency Department did not respond to requests for comment, and the city of Newburgh declined to release the autopsy of Mr. Ortiz. Hagosinga was taken into the emergency room to have her wound treated. She says she received a bill from her insurance, but was told by the hospital to ignore it since they would be covering the cost.
Today, I went to see my surgeons again. They have gone through my wound, and then they asked me to come in another 2 more weeks. And then they gave me physical therapy contact, so I'm taking medications as well.
Our common refrain is we can't really comment, you know, until and unless criminal charges are filed. And you can understand that that's out of respect for all the parties involved in the investigation, because it wouldn't be fair to anybody if we're commenting on something before we've made the determination that there's sufficient evidence to go forward.
Ms. Hagosinga said it was her well-timed decision to stand up that saved her life and sent the guard's bullet into her leg rather than a more critical part of her body. She added that she wished the guard had exercised more restraint before using a deadly weapon to avoid unnecessary damage.
If I don't stand up, definitely that bullet would come to my tummy or the chest. So I barely saved my life. So I thank God, like, due to some power, I saved my life. For that wouldn't happen anywhere. They should, like, before they kill someone, before they act like use weapons, they should use something else. That's what I'm thinking of every time.
This is an ongoing investigation. In Liberty, I'm Annie Bennett for Radio Catskill.
Thank you so much for your reporting, Annie. We'll take a quick break, and coming back, the clock is ticking for Congress to extend tax credits for healthcare. We'll have the update about what's at stake. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
We were fully expecting abuses from the Trump administration, but the scale is even worse than we were expecting. And I think we are in the crisis. And I don't think this is going to be a normal administration. Maybe I'm saying this just at the moment where some additional sanity will prevail, but I doubt it.
I'm Natalie Kitroev. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
Stay up with us for The Deep End tonight at 10, where host Jeff Loeffler will pay tribute to the late, great Steve Cropper, who passed away earlier this week. Cropper was the guitarist for the Stax Records house band, Booker T and the MGs, and they backed artists such as Otis Redding, Wilson Pickett, Sam and Dave, and a lot more. That's the Steve Cropper tribute show on The Deep End, tonight at 10, only on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to The Local Edition. I'm Genevieve Hartnett. With the Enhanced Affordable Care Act premium tax credits set to expire, millions of Americans could soon face dramatic increases in their health insurance premiums or lose their coverage entirely. New state-level data shows just how steep these increases could be for typical families, older adults, small business owners, and patients managing serious health conditions. And with Congress preparing for key votes in mid-December, the clock is ticking. Radio Catskill's Patricio Roballo spoke with Katie Berg, Senior Director of Federal Affairs at Blood Cancer United and a leading voice in the Keep Americans Covered Coalition, about the national impact of these potential changes, how the White House's expected framework factors into the timeline, and what's at stake for families navigating open enrollment right now. Here's that conversation.
Today, we're talking about a health care issue that touches millions of Americans, especially families, seniors, and patients fighting serious illnesses. Right now, Enhanced Affordable Care Act premium tax credits, expanded during the pandemic, are scheduled to expire at the end of this year. And without action from Congress, premiums from the marketplace coverage are projected to spike dramatically in 2026, threatening coverage for hundreds of thousands of people nationwide and hitting working families hard. So joining us to break this down and what's at stake is Katie Berg, Senior Director of Federal Affairs at Blood Cancer United and a leader with the Keep Americans Covered Coalition, which includes patients, providers, insurers, and others pushing to preserve these critical subsidies. So Katie, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me with you today. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this issue.
Yes, definitely. So Katie, let's just get to the meat of it. You know, why should listeners care that these premium tax credits are expiring at the end of the year?
Yeah, and I think that first starts with what do these premium tax credits do? And over 140,000 people in New York State use these tax credits to lower their monthly premium payments to make quality, comprehensive health insurance more affordable. You know, if these tax credits go away, we will see not only people in the state, but across the country see huge premium spikes, which means they're going to have to make impossible choices between maintaining their health or walking away from coverage altogether. And for people with serious and chronic conditions, that's a truly, truly life-changing decision.
So let's talk about, you know, what does this look like for everyday families, you know, shopping for coverage right now? You know, say a couple with kids or someone, you know, nearing retirement. If Congress doesn't act, like, you know, this it seems like that they're sort of like in a holding pattern.
Yeah, I mean, and they are, right? Like, so for a family in New York making around $65,000 a year, they would see their annual premiums increase by almost $3,000. A 60-year-old couple earning around $85,000 a year would see their premiums go up by almost $12,000. You know, these are not small sums of money. And so when we think about the impact on everyday people, it means fewer, you know, these types of price spikes means fewer doctor's visits, fewer medications. And for people living with, you know, for example, cancer, but certainly many other diseases as well, it could potentially mean less time with loved ones.
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to walk us through the timeline, you know, why do the next few weeks really matter as Congress gets ready to vote in mid-December?
Yeah, I mean, so the timeline really matters here. And I'll say first and foremost that this issue should have been resolved months ago. Americans and people living with chronic and serious conditions needed certainty about their ability to afford health insurance long time ago. That said, better late than never, but we are already in the midst of open enrollment and premium prices will go into effect on January 1st. So that's less than a month from now. And we know that when people shop for coverage, they shop based on if they can afford their premium. And right now those price tags are giving people sticker shock. And so right now we are working with Congress and urging the White House as well to really step up to the plate, resolve this issue that has been hanging out there for far too long, to provide the lifeline that patients need and a bridge to certainty for everyone else as well.
Right. Well, Kim, let's talk a little bit about the organization you're part of, Keep Americans Covered Coalition. They're using real stories from patients and families to sort of make this case of why this is important. What have you been hearing?
Yeah, and we've actually been hearing from people in New York. You know, we have an advocate, Andrew, in Brooklyn, who is a small business owner and whose entire livelihood hinges on his ability to be able to afford health insurance. He's a blood cancer survivor, so going without insurance for him is a non-starter. But that's the difference between him having to close up shop and try to find different work in a really difficult economy and being able to keep, you know, a small independent business alive where he can contribute to his community.
Congress does act and extends or strengthen these credits. What does this mean for people next year and what would be the goals beyond that?
I think our goal ultimately is to ensure that everybody has access to high quality health insurance that meets their needs. And I'm worried that some of the discussions that are happening in Congress right now are putting out options that would not help people with cancer or people with cardiovascular disease or diabetes or any other myriad condition, right? If it doesn't work for the people who need it the most in their moment of need, it doesn't work for anyone. One of the unique things about blood cancer is there is no preventive screening for blood cancers. And so a lot of people find out that they have cancer when they show up in an emergency room with a spiked fever or a broken bone, and they are whisked into a life-changing whirlwind of chemotherapy and scans and years and years and years of maintenance. And so when we think about like what Congress needs to do in this moment is that first they need to reauthorize these now. They need to reauthorize them as they are. And we can think about reforms longer term, but that is not something, this uncertainty and back of the napkin work that is happening in Congress right now to scramble and cover things up at the last moment is not the path forward. There is a really easy way to move forward on this issue to provide certainty to families, and that is to extend the tax credits as they are, and then Blood Cancer United, as well as Keep Americans Covered, welcome additional conversations about what can we do to strengthen our healthcare system overall.
Right. So, this came up to more to the forefront during the government shutdown. What was that experience like for you seeing, this particular, legislation sort of be on the chopping block and sort of being used as I guess a tool for one side of politics to sort of get what they wanted?
Yeah. I mean, Blood Cancer United is a nonpartisan organization, as is Keep Americans Covered. And we welcome the opportunity to work with anybody to advance and better the lives of the constituents that we serve, regardless of what party they're in. That said, we recognize that this is an incredibly important issue that is literally life or death for millions of people across this country, including people with serious conditions like cancer. And, this tax credit is a really critical component to affordability in our system of care. And without it, it means that people will not have time with their families, no doctor's visits. Like, honestly, I can't boil it down enough into simple terms. This is life or death. And so we need things to happen, and we need things to happen now. And we are encouraged that Republicans and Democrats and potentially the White House are really starting to pay attention to this issue, although a little later than we had hoped.
It's scary just to think that folks would have to choose between, eating or medications or even not being able to have treatment. Like if you have blood cancer or any kind of type of cancer, not to have that treatment, it has to be heartbreaking, not only for them, but for the families involved.
I mean, that's exactly right. In the United States, we have incredible privilege around having some of the most advanced treatments accessible to us. But none of that counts for anything if people cannot afford to access it, and insurance is that pathway to treatment and to cures and to days, happier days, right? And so, which is why we feel so strongly about this issue. Our organization invests an incredible amount of money and time and effort into biomedical research, but if the discoveries that are happening in that space go without access to care through insurance, then they mean very little.
Yeah. Well, Katie, before we go, is there anything else that we have not touched on? Do you want folks to know?
Yeah, if you haven't reached out to your member of Congress, please do. You can find additional information at AmericansCovered.org, where you can take action. And if you or a loved one has been touched by a blood cancer and needs support, our organization is here for you. Please find us at BloodCancerUnited.org.
That's Katie Berg, Senior Director of Federal Affairs with Blood Cancer United, and part of the Keep Americans Covered Coalition. As Congress heads into a crucial stretch, millions of families are waiting to see whether lawmakers will extend the ACA premium tax credits to help make health insurance affordable. So, Katie, thank you so much for doing this. I do really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you so much for your reporting, Patricio. That's it for the local edition this evening, and that's it for me at WJFF Radio Catskill this year. I have so enjoyed getting to work with this incredible team of reporters, and I'm so grateful to all of you for listening and for trusting us to tell you the news. Take care of yourselves and each other. Have a great night and a wonderful weekend.
Support comes from Sullivan 180. Building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. I play classics you love, deep cuts, and brand new music. Friday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.